This is the Gospel Revolution.
Since you're knocking on the door, you're begging to come in, yeah. Unaware that all the wildness been knocking from within. You are the love you seek, a perfect yet unique, righteous, holy.
Here's the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Lilborn Williams.
Hello, Daniel Thomas Rouse. How is the, you know, the thing of it is with your, the moniker of your football field there, you get to call that the frozen tundra no matter what time of the year you're in. I don't know if people understand that or not, that you don't call it the frozen tundra just because it's cold. It's the frozen tundra is the name of the football field, right?
Yep. It's a it's a declaration of the Packers, the Green Bay Packers.
I just think it's so silly. I just think they could have grown up with it.
Well, when you watch a Packer game that's going on in the middle of December, early January, and you see guys out there without their shirts on and they got icicles coming from their chest of their hair, the hair of their chest.
Like the hair of the dog.
And their beards. And yeah, they're just, you understand the term frozen tundra.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. I would have called it the hope for sunshine or something. Oh, well, that's just my opinion. The people in Green Bay seem to be very happy with their Packers and also with their frozen tundra. I mean, I never hear the slightest bit of displeasure in your voice when you call it the frozen tundra. You seem very proud of it.
Yeah, it is what it is. And, you know, I do complain about the cold, but hey, you know, I've made the choice to live here. So, you know, there's a reason.
Yeah, there's a reason for everything, right?
Little interesting fact about the Green Bay Packers that's happening this year. We're trading footballs. So we got London soccer teams are coming to play at the Green Bay Packers Stadium, Lambeau Field.
Yeah.
And the Green Bay Packers this winter are going to London to play American football in London on soccer field. So it's going to be interesting.
So the people in Europe would say that the people of London are coming to the Green Bay Packers field play real football, and that the Americans are going to England to play fake football. So
exactly.
I am international enough to know that. And I am as little as I know about sports. I know that. So, all right, we're batting 1,000. Oh my God, we've got caught in sports metaphors and now I don't know how to get out. I just see that goal and stop already. Come on, Michael.
Place your bets. Who's going to finish first?
Now that went from sports to gambling. So I'm not sure gambling is a sport, or is it? I don't know.
Maybe in the Kentucky Derby. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, we've gone to some direction here. I'm not sure what it is, but anybody that knows my detachment from sports should be getting a good kick out of this.
And I'm not very good myself. You know, the Green Bay Packers and hockey as far as playing hockey, but as far as players or teams.
I think we may be kind of alike. People ask me, though, do I enjoy sports? And I really do. But I only want to watch the playoffs, the finals, the grand slams, the whatever is the last game of that sport. I mean, I can even watch, you know, like hockey. That's very an exciting sport. I enjoyed remember the big upset of the U.S. team over Russia? And then made the movie out of it. Oh, how did, well, you just can't get more exciting than that. The, what do they call the ones where they push the little,
is it curling?
Curling, yes. I even enjoy curling, but it's amazing that there could be so much intensity about this thing just sliding by itself, you know, going across there. But when it's one team against the other and it's the major team going up against the other major team, I get interested. It's like, you know, you're up trying to push that thing down the ice help for them. So I get all involved. I don't know that my metaphors hang into as I watch, but I do try. So.
Well, you and I sat in your living room and we watched a Packer game last year. That was fun.
Well, see, I've just deleted that out of my brain. I don't even remember that. See, and I can participate even, but is it going to stay there? Yeah, most likely not. So.
Well, if I remember correctly, I think you enjoyed the color of the Green Bay Packer uniforms.
Oh, okay. sounds like me. I do like green, so.
Yes. So anyways, here we are. Welcome to
In the Wilderness. Oh my gosh.
I don't know if this would be a good time to lead into it or not, but hey, Michael, this week kicks off our pledge drive.
Well,
this is what your dollar gets.
Goodness gracious.
Unquantifiable sports metaphors.
yes. Yeah. The completely incorrect misused sports metaphors for sure. Oh my. So now we got some people rolling in the floor laughing at us, and others are just, it's like, come on guys, you know, get over it. But we know we can't please everybody, but we do want to share enough gospel with you and make it reasonable enough understanding that would cause you to want to put your money here. So
if you're wondering how to put your money in, you can go to the website. It's probably the easiest way, gospelrevolution.com. Hit the donate button. You can donate right online. Otherwise, there's phone numbers listed on there. And any one of us are more than happy to help accommodate your donation.
Yes.
And our mailing address is on that website as well. And you can send in a check. And like I always used to say in my old Christian days, you spell million, M-I-L-L-I-O-N.
No doubt about that. So, yeah, guys, we do appreciate all that you do, and we're trucking right along. I think our growth, if we were to be compensated for our growth in our understanding of the gospel, we would be millionaires over this last year.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It has been a whirlwind. We've almost feel like Dorothy, you know, with the tornado coming through and trying to hold on to the cow's horns. And it's like, everything's blowing away. Hold on. So and I don't even do Dorothy good. Jesus.
There's no place like home.
Oh, there you go. See, Daniel pulled us out. We do appreciate what you do. But this has been just since the last pledge drive, for goodness sakes, the things that we've walked through that have answered questions and created, for every question that we have answered and gotten a resolve on it, it's created 10 more questions. This month, I am turning 70 years old. And I think most people are retired by then. And it's like, I can't even see the end yet. So it's so weird to know that that thought doesn't come into my head about retiring, you know. And if I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing, I just say I'm retired. So and there's a lot of times I don't want people to know what I do, because especially around here, to say, well, what do I say? I'm in the ministry, I'm a Bible teacher, and unless I'm willing to sit there and then listen to all of the things that they assume that means, oh goodness, I'd just rather say I'm retired.
You are a communications director, communications master, communications something.
Yes, we'll come up with something that I can say without lying, but without provoking any other questions. See, that's the problem. You have to learn how to answer people's questions without provoking other questions. And that's really hard to do, you know?
Yeah.
But most people don't know how to carry on a conversation anyway, which I'm kind of demonstrating here that I don't know how. But that would be the thing to do if somebody answers a question, is that you'd ask them a follow-up question. But most people don't do that anyway.
Right.
They mostly want to talk about themselves. So that's what saves me from talking about things I don't want to talk about, as I know most people want to talk about themselves. So mm-hmm. I just simply say, oh, what about you? And then, wow, we're gone, you know?
Yeah.
And then I've got 100 questions to keep them from asking me another question. They don't know I'm playing defense. So what's going on here today? All of these revelations about things that I don't need to be telling anybody, I don't think.
The secrets are flying from the secret city.
They are. It's like, who took the lid off the jar or something?
Well, I'll try to save you.
Please.
Last week, we started answering a question that we got from Vic. Vic asked us if we would kindly go through Galatians chapter 3 and discuss the topic of righteousness that was imputed through personal faith and righteousness that came, that we were made righteous through the faith mm-hmm. of Jesus Christ. And so last week, we kind of set the stage for that.
Yeah.
We backed up to Galatians chapter 2, went through about half of that. And then we, Michael went through talking about the seed, because Abraham's seed is discussed in this chapter. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that podcast yet, I would encourage you to pause this one, go back, listen to that one, because it's going to kind of set the stage for the premise on which we're building Galatians chapter 3 today.
Yeah. This is a very intricate chapter here. Vic had every reason in the world to ask that we cover this. As we started going through it, we saw even more so why that this needs to be covered.
I think he called it a tough nut to crack.
There you go. That was his metaphor that he used. So
No sports metaphor from Vic.
No, I don't think we're going to get that from Vic. As we do go through this, please remember that one of our major breakthroughs in just the last few months has been this issue. Well, it actually took place during the winter conference, didn't it, about the imputed righteousness by faith and just being made righteous. And that was a shocker for me. I remember when I saw that delineate that imputed righteousness was different than the righteousness that we were made in Christ. And boy, Daniel and I went through, we looked at made sin and imputed sin and made righteous and imputed righteous. And there's a reason that those terms are different in the progression of the story of how all of this started and how all of it finished. The power of this story, Daniel, cannot be underestimated, even though at this time it is being undermined by Mirror Bible and Grace Global and Andre Robbie. They undermined the story completely. In fact, the response, only responses that we've got from them is that they just get so offended at the thought that we are affirming that God was ever angry. And they do get very upset at that we would have the audacity to agree with all of the Hebrew scriptures. You know, a pox upon me, I think. So, sounds like a plague, right? But this incredible story that is laid out very succinctly, we do not ever intend to undermine it. Now, we may understand the story more clearly, but we just don't see the rationale. In fact, we see the devastation of not accepting the story, because if you do not believe Moses, you don't believe Jesus.
Mm.
Now, that's not me that said that. I think it was kind of Jesus that said that. If you don't believe Moses, you don't believe Jesus. Dudes, take that verse and put it in front of your eyes for about a week. If you don't believe Moses, you can't believe Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that's why they don't believe Jesus. You say, well, what do you mean they don't believe Jesus? Well, they don't believe Moses in the things that he said about God being angry, and they don't believe Jesus about being the one who came to resolve that anger.
Yeah.
They don't believe that Jesus changed anything. So it is true. The one thing we can prove by listening to these three groups and individuals and this brand new Bible out on the market is that if you don't believe Moses, you will not believe Jesus. They have proven that, Daniel.
Yep.
They have proven that if you do not believe, I mean, what a wise statement for Jesus to make. It should have been a very good, strong directive about how to research and study the scriptures and how to come up and formulate thoughts and understanding about the gospel. Mm-hmm. But by taking that one simple understanding that if you don't believe Moses, you're not going to believe Jesus, by doing that, they have completely demolished the impact of the work of the cross.
Yeah.
Now, a part of that process is that God introduced the issue of righteousness through personal faith that was imputed through Abraham, that nobody was righteous by condition or just because that they were. They were righteous because of what they did or what they believed. And that's what we have all the way from Cain and Abel, which is the very first one listed in Hebrews chapter 11, is that by what he did, we could see he was righteous. So we know that that's not faith. We know he wasn't made righteous. It says that he was righteous because of what he did. And then on through all of these characters listed in Hebrews chapter 11, we were being introduced to the subject of faith throughout the entire Hebrew scriptures. But we were not introduced to the faith of the Son of God. Mm-hmm. But we were introduced to the failures and the incompleteness of man's faith, of man's obedience. Because you see, the faith that was required and the believing that was required under the law was no better than the law that produced that requirement. They both fell into the same category of this isn't going to get you what you need. The law's not going to get you what you need. Your faith isn't going to get you what you need. Here it is. Have at it. Let's let you prove that you don't ever get what you need. And what Abraham needed was not imputed righteousness. That's not what Abraham needed, Abraham himself. And the only thing that he could get out of his own faith was imputed righteousness. He could only get it counted to his account. Here's a credit. That's like having a credit card for righteousness. But what we needed was being severely compared. And the reason I'm going through this is because this is what this chapter 3 does. It severely and critically compares the righteousness that comes as imputed by the faith of a human being, and then the righteousness that is made out of everyone through the faith of one man, Christ Jesus, the faith of God and or the faith of Christ. So what we're looking at here is, does this chapter indeed delineate these two? That's why we went back and we checked in with Galatians chapter 2, verse 16 through 21. And Paul made it very clear in his last statement before chapter 3, I do not frustrate the grace of God. For if righteousness comes by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. So the issue is, how does righteousness appear? How is righteousness come about? We know there are two subjects up to this point. I mean, my goodness, we did a whole conference past winter on the difference between imputed righteousness and being made righteous. And that, you know, I think we made the case. Well, we didn't make the case. Paul made the case. The scriptures made the case. And we simply looked to them to guide us in understanding this powerful delineation between these two. that we do not have imputed righteousness. Oh man, what a freedom that brought to my own consciousness is that I'm freed from imputed righteousness. It's one of the things, what did Jesus set us free from? ... One of them was imputed righteousness.
Mm.
Because we are not the seed of Abraham. The Jews were not the seed of Abraham. Even the Jews were not the seed of Abraham because they were his descendants. They were the seed of Abraham because of the faith of Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's head spinning. It really is. But the reason right. our head spins is because we're having to unwind some misconceptions that we've had. People over the years, I mean, how many times have you sat with somebody and you've explained something to them that's quite easy, and they say, well, now you just have me all confused.
Mm.
Well, I admit you're confused, but I'm not sure I'm the one that caused the confusion.
Yeah.
I think it could have been, nor is it somebody else telling me the truth that I'm now my head spinning and confusion. Not the person who's telling me the truth is not necessarily the one responsible for my confusion. It's the preconceived notions that I'm having to let unwind in my head now and come apart and fly apart sometimes, bouncing off of every other doctrine that I've had for decades and wondering where the hell this is all going to land.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in this. And my goodness, but you know, I think we had learned enough about the faith of God and imputed righteousness to where that I don't think our heads come spinning off of, you know, when we went through this, but we kind of had it. We just almost had it. We just didn't have it until we got it. And then it was like, oh my God, look at this. So that's what we're going to be looking at here.
And for me, it answered the questions, because when you understood about the faith of Christ, there were some questions about, you know, Abraham believed and it was accounted unto him for righteousness. And, well, if what we understand about the faith of Christ is correct, what in the world does that mean?
Yeah. And it not only says that Abraham was imputed righteousness, it says, and it'll be imputed to you too, if you believe.
Right.
It was a conundrum that at the time was difficult. Now it just is, it's like, oh, wow, this is really wonderful. This has resolved itself. We haven't resolved it. It's resolved itself because we were willing to read in context. So that's what we're going to do for you again today. And as we go into chapter 3.
I love chapter 3, verse 1. I mean, it just tells you everything you need to know about the Apostle Paul.
And about the others, too.
Yes. Galatians chapter 3, verse 1. Oh, foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you that you should not obey the truth, before whose very eyes Jesus Christ was clearly portrayed among you as crucified?
Well, again, yes, it's like you say, the very first verse is so incredible. I remember 40, 45 years ago reading that and not knowing who had bewitched them and wondering who had bewitched them. And I think Norval said it was the Baptist, you know. And everybody has been accused of being the bewitchers. But if you have read chapter 1 and chapter 2, the bewitchers have already been named by name.
Yep.
And he is telling them that to fall to that persuasion, that particular persuasion of the gospel. And obviously, it is, look who Paul is having to untie this bewitching for. He's having to tell them the difference between imputed righteousness through personal faith. And he's having to explain the righteousness that came through the faith of Christ. So here you get an insight into all of the letters of Peter, James, and John.
Yeah.
And you say, well, what is that insight? This was their foolishness. Mm. Their foolishness was that they still were preaching imputed righteousness through personal faith.
Yeah.
And that's why Peter, James, and John teach so differently than Paul does, because they did not know the difference between the they were the seed of Abraham. But remember, Paul told him, says, you're not the seed of Abraham because, you know, you're of his lineage. And they did not understand that whatsoever. And their message really was that you still had to believe, and that if you believed, then you would get imputed righteousness also. Now, we could take you into many statements in Peter, James, and John and their letters here and show you where that was their persuasion. It's really very dynamic now that you can actually compare that when you realize that the thing that had bewitched the Galatians and the foolishness based on the teaching that comes in this very chapter, we know what they were bewitched about.
Yeah.
They were bewitched about personal faith.
Mm.
They were bewitched about imputed righteousness. What was it they were bewitched away from the faith of Christ?
And in that being bewitched with personal faith, that also included its some works.
Yes.
Which is also being addressed here with the law. And as Michael had pointed out, that when James taught about being justified, he talked about faith and works.
Yes.
Because he was teaching the imputed righteousness.
Absolutely. One of the best examples of many, actually, from those is that we do know that you can compare Romans 4 and James chapter 1, chapter 2, and they use the exact same analogies and come up with the exact opposite results.
Yeah.
Now, how could they do that? Because one is still walking in the understanding of imputed righteousness through personal faith, and Paul has graduated from that, if you will. Paul got a revelation of the faith of the Son of God, and it made all the difference in the world. That's why we have two views of the good news. And once you understand the difference, you realize the other one's not good news at all. There's only one true view of the good news. Just because Peter, James, and John taught it doesn't make it another view of the good news. It's just another view that's not good news.
Yeah. All right, verse 2. This only I want to learn from you, Mr. Sassy Pants. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Mm-hmm. Are you so foolish, having begun in the Spirit? Are you now being made perfect by the flesh? Have you suffered so many things in vain, if indeed it was in vain? Therefore, he who supplies the Spirit to you and works miracles among you, does he do it by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith?
All right, let's try to see what we have read here, because the next verse says, even as. He is going to compare this to even as Abraham. So let's collect this together and see what it was. And so Paul's asking them a question now. He said that they obviously are convinced that they have received the Spirit. And he said, did you get that? Did you get? Now, I'm not thinking that he's talking about the baptism in the Holy Ghost and all that. If you take this into context, I think he's talking about the Spirit of righteousness, the life of the Spirit, which is righteousness. Mm. And he said, did you get this righteousness by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? And he said, are you so foolish, having begun in the Spirit, are you now made perfect by the flesh? So he's letting them know that the condition they have, they've always had since Christ, but now they're going back and trying to work at it to get what they already have. So he's challenging this doctrine of imputed. You'll see that he is challenging the doctrine of imputed righteousness through their faith, because he's letting them know that you already received this. You already have it. And he's now asking them, so what part of the law is a part of this, and what part of faith is a part of this? And he says, and he asks them, he says, are you so what was the foolishness about? Having begun in the spirit, are you now made perfect by the flesh? So the foolishness was this persuasion that the disciples were teaching, which was still caught up in the righteousness being imputed because of the things that were obvious from Abraham. Paul even agreed. Yes, Paul didn't go through and try to disannul this teaching about Abraham's faith and that is imputed faith or imputed righteousness. He didn't say it's wrong. He's saying it's been done over. It has been completed. God went ahead of you here and completed all of this issue of righteousness. And now to go back to the formula for righteousness, when God came up with his own way of making us righteous, and that formula for righteousness did not make them righteous at all. It didn't make Abraham righteous at all. It credited him with righteousness.
Yeah.
As Abraham, along with all the rest of the Hebrews chapter 11 folks, goes, which we've gone through with you just here again recently, and we'll go through it many more times, about our restructuring the view of Hebrews chapter 11, is that the end of it is so powerful that they, without us, should not be made perfect. So obviously, the righteousness that Abraham had was not the perfect one. It was the imputed one.
Mm.
Everything that they got was a good report. We don't have a good report. You don't have a good report. In fact, neither do they now.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Christ, perfection of righteousness was made for everyone. And, you know, it's been difficult for me just to stop saying imputed in the wrong place, because we've used it all of our lives.
Right.
So that's what we're learning here.
I was thinking about this term, the hearing of faith, and I think it'd be beneficial just to reference Romans chapter 10,
mm-hmm.
Because the Apostle Paul, this is something that was understood at the time. You know, Paul is dismantling in Romans chapter 10 a belief that was being presented, something that was being preached.
Yes.
And he even says that in Romans chapter 10, verse 8. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith, which most translations say we preach, but Don pointed out it simply says in the Greek, which is preached. So there is this hearing of faith doctrine, if you will.
And Paul's acknowledging it. Yeah.
That Paul's acknowledging it. It was being preached in the time. And he then goes on for the rest of the chapter and dismantles that understanding that if you hear the faith with your ear, you believe it in your heart, you confess it with your mouth, and then you'll be saved. And he totally goes through that and says, well, if that's true, then what about this and what about that? And that's the same thing that he's addressing here, is that's the hearing of faith. And I think it's important to, again, put some emphasis on the difference between the hearing of faith and the faith of Christ. There's a big difference here.
Big difference. And to quote that verse at the end of Romans chapter 10, just about three verses before the end, Paul says, after explaining what was being taught, he says, so then, to wrap up this whole thing, so then, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word.
Yeah.
And then immediately says after that, but I say unto you.
Yeah.
So then, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word is a persuasion that Paul was refuting.
Mm-hmm.
He's refuting it here.
Yeah.
It's the very same subject in two different letters of Paul's on the exact same subject altogether. And then after he says, you know, that, well, so then faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. And I think that if that were translated correctly with punctuation, I think there would be a question mark after it. Because it's question marks all the way up to it.
Right.
Like, where's the preacher coming from? How are they going to believe? Why are they going to do that? So then faith cometh by hearing, hearing by the word. You see, the whole context of it is questions. It's just like me. I remember going back. You know the verse. This is just to show you how that punctuation can form a whole society. I mean, I remember hearing after I started learning the gospel, you know, there's verses that start popping up out of the Hebrew scriptures and everywhere. It's like, well, what in the world does that mean then? And the one, and it's plastered everywhere. I mean, Cecil B. DeMille has quoted it. Movies. I mean, it's everywhere. It's used in poems. And the quote says, I lift up mine eyes into the hills from which cometh my help. And my help cometh from the Lord. It's like, wait a minute. Does your help come from the hills or does it come from the Lord?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be dang, and anybody wants to go back and look at it, you can look at it, and there's about four or five questions about people's perceptions about God. And the last one, before he says, my help cometh from the Lord, is, I look into the hills from which cometh my help. Mm. That would be, the context says that's a question mark. Yeah. How many people got your help from the hills? Jeez. I mean,
the hillbillies.
I know the Beverly Hillbillies did, but they sure did. That was in the crude bubbling up, you know, oil that is. Now, I'm ready to get some help from the hills if the hills want to give me that kind of help. But your help has never come from the hills.
Mm.
But it's stated like, oh, I just love being in mountains. You know, the Bible says that the mountains, that's where our help comes from. Like, really? My help comes from hills. Well, then Jesus, what'd Jesus do? If help comes from hills, why did Jesus do this? It's like, so only thing we're showing you is that there are places where punctuation has transformed everything. And just consider that if you've got a list of questions, the very last one that's been turned into a statement could be a question too.
Mm.
Now, according to that Romans chapter 10, there is no other way to consider it that when you're saying, especially in light of Paul asking the question here, does faith come by hearing?
Yeah.
It's a question here. Why isn't it a question in the book of Romans? Why is it not a question mark there after all the other question marks all the way down to it? So then faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. And then especially as it's followed up, but I say unto you, didn't they all hear? It's like, wait a minute. Okay, if 1 + 1 = 5, as you're saying, then what about this hearing and everybody getting saved from it? Didn't they all hear? And Paul is proving that hearing does not produce the faith that it takes to become righteous.
Yeah.
It doesn't do it. You say, oh, Mike, I heard the word and I believed. But what did you believe? Whatever you believed, it didn't make you righteous. Mm. You were righteous a long time before you ever believed. And that's what Paul is saying even in that chapter. That's what he's saying to these guys in this chapter. You can stay stuck in faith for imputed righteousness if you want to. But I'm telling you, you were made righteous. You were brought the spirit of righteousness before you ever attempted to do anything about it. And even if you were attempting, in the middle of your attempts, Christ came made you righteous, and now you're still trying to do what you've already got by doing works and your own faith. So he comes to this incredible conclusion and says, you know, but, you know, haven't they all heard? And then, of course, the powerful finish where he's quoting Isaiah, and he says, you know, well, you know, if faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word, well, I guess Isaiah got it wrong. Because Isaiah said, I was found by them that didn't seek, didn't ask, didn't believe anything. I was found of them that didn't ask or believe anything. And even those who were not a people, where it is written, these are not my people, there it shall be said, these are the people of God. So even those that the Hebrew scriptures disqualified, Jesus qualified. But it's important to know that the Hebrew scriptures disqualified those people.
Mm-hmm.
People, please. It's important to know that everything about you and I would have been disqualified. Now, we don't even have to consider this anymore. This has been done for 2,000 years.
Right.
I used to go back and people would read the verses about Sodom and Gomorrah and being condemned and everything. And I finally told people, I said, boy, I said, I am so glad that my sin is listed as an abomination.
Mm.
Because now I know for sure I'm redeemed.
Yeah.
Because I know who he came to redeem.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, is yours not in there? Maybe you're not, maybe you're not as sure as I am that I'm redeemed. It's like, you know, mine's in there. Mm. And then we have people who even want to take that out of the scriptures. Oh, God would, no. Listen, folks, you don't, the wisdom of God is greater than your wisdom or mine, either one. When the wisdom of God and the results of it can make you rejoice in the fact that you were condemned with no hope whatsoever, that is the wisdom of God that can make you rejoice in your condemnation.
Mm.
The condemnation, it's the very same way that he compares the sin of Adam to the obedience of Christ. It's like, my God, I'm so glad. But you know, what I got was an overabundance of grace and righteousness compared to what Adam distributed to the whole human race. It's like a drop out of the ocean of grace that we now have. And yes, my condemnation was great, but my redemption's greater.
Ooh.
My redemption's greater. My condemnation. Oh, don't take, no, you're not taking that out of the Hebrew scriptures. You're not taking my condemnation out of there. You're not taking it out, because if you take out my condemnation, you're taking out my redemption.
That's good stuff. I was reminiscing the first time that I heard you talk about Romans chapter 10.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I remember sitting in my office in my church, and I swear there was, my jaw was probably to the floor. And I was just all like, you know, because how many times had I preached Romans 10, 9, and 10?
Yeah.
And I mean, I was out on the street telling people Romans 10, 9, and 10. I was, you know, every chance I had at a service, I was given an altar call for Romans 10, 9, and 10. And the thing that stood out to me was, it was right there the whole time. This is what's being preached. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And this is what the scriptures, this is what Isaiah says. And it was just all
beautiful.
Like, oh my God. And I think that day I listened to that message probably 3 or 4 times. I mean, just back to back to back, because I'm all like, this can't be true. The first time I'm all like, no way, this can't be true. So I went through it again and I took out my Bible. I had my concordance out, and I'm going with you guys walking through this, and I'm all like, huh? It's true.
Well, you laid it out more succinctly than I realized, as with that very clear statement you made. And that really is true, that Paul was saying, here's what's being taught. Here's what I'm saying. And here's what the scriptures say.
Yeah.
And I've never heard it laid out so succinctly as that. That's beautiful.
Well, you did it.
I'm guilty of a lot of things I don't realize I'm guilty of. So. That's like I just heard that for the first time in my life. It's like, and you're telling me I said it. It's like, wait a minute.
Okay. Let me back up to verse 5 before we read into verse 6 so that we can keep the flow going here. Therefore, he who supplies the Spirit to you and works miracles among you, does he do it by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Just as Abraham believed God, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness. Therefore, know that only those who are of faith are sons of Abraham.
Mm. Very powerful thing. Now, Paul is resolved to understand. He's letting them know that this issue of faith is a very important one.
Mm-hmm.
We're not removing the issue of faith. But you need a clarification of this faith. Now, that clarification we got just earlier this year. Now, we had understood that it was by the faith of Christ, but not to the exclusion of the imputed righteousness. And that just, oh my, what weight this the faith of Christ gained by us being able to delineate not only that imputed righteousness, but all the statements that surround it, because that was the only places that had things. It's like, well, I wonder what we do with that. We can't take away from what Paul said about the faith of Christ, but what does this mean? And so many of those things just tumbled automatically. So he is saying that even as Abraham believed God and it was counted to him for righteousness, know ye therefore that they which are of faith, the same are the children of Abraham. But now becomes the question, whose faith?
Mm.
That's what we have not settled the issue on. Now, Paul has already settled this issue before. Of course, he didn't have chapter 3, but he's already settled this issue several paragraphs back. And he says in verse 20, he said, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ that liveth in me. And the life which I now live, I live by the faith of the Son of God. So he's already let them know by which faith. Now, he has also let them know that the foolishness of making themselves sinners again. That's what we read through in verse 16 through 21. He's saying that that after I'm justified by the faith of Christ, which says by the faith of Christ in verse 16 of chapter 2, he is then talking about then seeking justification that you already have, that makes yourself a sinner again. So he's trying to show them how that this pursuit of the inferior form of righteousness is actually making them sinners again. If you're under imputed righteousness, you're still under the law.
Mm-hmm.
Because imputed righteousness was of the law. Imputed righteousness is not of the new covenant.
Boom.
Shakalaka.
Verse 8. And the scriptures foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel to Abraham beforehand, saying, in you all the nations shall be blessed.
All right. So see, this is backing up now and saying that the gospel was preached before unto Abraham, that this is even for the Gentiles, but this way that he was able to see that he showed Abraham was not made manifest yet. So he's given, now, and you can follow that same pattern all the way through chapter 11. God called Abraham and Moses and Elijah and all these guys, and he put them in a lockstep of predestined actions and deeds and accomplishments and failures.
Mm. Mm.
All of them were predestined. And at the same time, then he gave them a view of what it was going to be. So at the same time, he gave them a view of what the end of this was to be, that you're going through a stage play. You're going through a performance. You've been chosen and selected. And I admit it's a pretty crappy thing. I know that this is not the way you would have done it, but I'm going to give you a view of why.
Yeah.
These guys all understood why they did what they did.
Mm-hmm.
They saw it. That's what Hebrews 11 says, that they saw even him that was invisible at the time. Well, guess what? God's not invisible anymore. But they looked it to him that was invisible at the time. And when Christ was born, God was no longer invisible.
Mm.
Boy, could we talk all day about that? Now he is beginning to delineate between the faith of Abraham and how are you of the seed of Abraham? Because you're his descendant, are you a seed? How did you become a seed? So this is the thing that Paul is explaining, and we'll continue on from there.
Verse 9. So then those who are of faith are blessed with believing Abraham.
All right. So those that are of faith, but which faith? You're blessed with Abraham, but not with imputed righteousness. Because now even Abraham doesn't have imputed righteousness anymore. Abraham was made righteous at the cross.
Mm.
Paul is showing them that the process and the inferior, if you will, the righteousness itself was not inferior, but the way they had it was inferior. It's an inferior thing to have a suit of clothes and to be the suit of clothes, to be the thing rather than to have the thing. And that's the difference. We are the thing. Now, we don't have the thing. We don't have righteousness. We are righteousness.
Mm.
And that's what Paul is trying to tell them. Did you begin in the spirit? Are you so foolish now as to go back to try to be what you already are?
Yeah.
That's really the whole question here. Now, through what means are you trying to be what you already are, having faith for imputed righteousness? That's how you are going back to try to cover your tracks that don't need to be covered. You've already got what you are reverting back to. In fact, you're also making yourself a sinner again.
Yeah.
Because all of this whole package goes together. You can't separate it. It's all, it's a one man deal.
Verse 10. For as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse, for it is written, curses everyone who does not continue in all the things which are written in the book of the law to do them.
And that is the hook. Everything. How many times have you preached? I've preached. Everybody's preached, gone to a law and said, if you do this, you'll be blessed. And thank you for playing. Not only do you have to keep all of the things that are written in the law, but all of your children have to keep all of the things written that is in the law, and all of your children's children have to keep everything that is written in the law, then you qualify for that blessing.
Mm.
You know, I knew I was okay until I had kids. The only ones that's going to help us out of this is my grandkids. I mean, goodness gracious. So. But this is this powerful thing laid out here. This is a mirror image, if you will, of the book of Romans, of Romans chapter 10. This is the very same thing that Paul is trying to help correct, is this obsession with personal confession of faith.
Yeah.
Instead, that we should be trusting in Christ's profession of faith, not ours.
Which is the next verse, verse 11. But that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident, for the just shall live by faith. And if I could quote that as it actually says in Habakkuk, the just shall live by his faith.
Yes, very clearly says the just shall live by his faith. And what a difference, because that is left out here But you see, if it said the just shall live by his faith, see, it would be affirming what Paul said in verse 16 of chapter 2. It would be affirming of what Paul said in chapter 2, verse 20. And you're going to see other places on through verse 22. But the scriptures hath concluded all under sin, that the promise by the faith of Christ might be given. So it's the promise that is given by the faith of Christ. The promise, what promise? The promise of righteousness. Don't get lost in the woods here, because we're talking about one subject and two ways of obtaining that promise. Either through the faith of Abraham and by his physical seed, which Paul makes it clear, you're not the seed just because you're Abraham's children.
Yeah.
That's the beef here. You're not the seed just because you're Abraham's children. You're the seed because of Christ. And because of Christ, you're Abraham's seed. Yes, I realize that's a little tricky quink-a-dink there, but that's exactly what Paul said, is that you became the seed through Christ before you could ever be the seed of Abraham as a descendant.
Yeah.
This one has superseded that.
Verse 12, yet the law is not of faith, but the man who does them shall live by them.
Yeah. You know, if it's, if you're going with the law, you're going to have to live by the law. And if you live by the law, you die by the law.
Verse 13, Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law, having become a curse mm-hmm. for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone who hangeth on a tree. That the blessing of Abraham might come upon the Gentiles in Christ Jesus, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith.
All right. So here he goes, letting them know that you're not as exclusive as you think you are because you're Abraham's seed. You're not Abraham's seed if it hadn't been for Jesus. But because of Jesus, not are only those that are of Abraham's descendants, but even the Gentiles now have exactly what you have. Because this faith and this righteousness is not imputed, and it's not man's. It is not Abraham's. It's not of his seed. It's of the seed of Christ, and therefore of the faith of Christ. So the faith of Christ and the seed and the faith and the righteousness of Christ affects the entire human race, and therefore is superabundantly above all we've ever asked or thought. This is that comparison between the one to the other, and it's always from the old to the new. It's always the difference between a drop in the bucket to the oceans of the world, and yet we have people with the very incredible audacity to tell you that nothing changed at the cross. Now, we're not on here telling you, warning you, don't listen to them. Oh, don't listen to them. We're telling you, listen.
Yeah.
We want you to hear how stupid it is. You say, Mike, you just called them stupid. Their doctrine is stupid, folks. It's stupid to say you preach Christ and nothing changed at the cross. STUPPID. You know, it's a double P ID. It really is. If it's not that, it's nothing. To take the work of Christ and make it nothing just because you're offended by the Hebrew scriptures. That makes me speechless. I don't know of anything else on earth that makes me speechless, but that makes me speechless, because there is no connective tissue of scripture or spirituality that connects that, except doing a threading through the eye of a needle about Jesus being the perfect representation of the Father.
Mm.
Well, he was the perfect representation of his Father. God didn't have any other children.
Yeah.
This is exactly the way God the Father looks to Christ. What he wanted was for that to be exactly the way God looks to the whole world. So he changed everything so that could be.
Mm, beautiful. Well, Michael, we're about halfway through, and I know we've got some meat coming up here. We're going to talk about the promise. We're going to talk about the law. This is all going to come to a beautiful conclusion, but not this week. I love that about our show is we just keep coming back with more and more.
Exactly.
Just keep you on the edge of your seat.
And take you to the cliff and say, okay, yeah, you can either jump by yourself or wait for us next week. We'll jump together. Daniel, this has been very incredible. I tell you, Paul, I think the necessity of us pulling Romans 10 and the very same statement, I might say, that Paul made in Romans 10 about faith, about the hearing of faith and about faith coming by hearing. He has made the very same statements in Galatians that he has in Romans, and he's doing the very same disclaimer of that type of faith. And that, but in this one, he's going in more succinctly as to what that faith, that personal faith, was all about. It was about the imputed righteousness. So now he's discrediting it. He's discrediting this. Faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. He's discrediting this again, but with fuller understanding of what actually, why he's discrediting it. Because by comparison, being made righteous and having a credit for righteousness can't even be compared.
And so it is. We must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate in this quarterly pledge drive. Or you can go to gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate button. You can find us on your favorite social media network, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Please be sure to hit that subscribe, share, and like button on whatever platform you are listening. Now it's good night from Daniel Rouse, and now you know what it is, the frozen tundra.
And we know why it is. And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in the secret city, because we didn't want anybody to know we were going to drop a bomb. we appreciate you guys. It is kind of strange living around here. I bet there's no other town in the world that has a street called Centrifuge Way. I drive occasionally on Centrifuge Way. I don't know what other parts are in our streets, but I'm sure they're everywhere. Also buried in the woods around here. Oh my God, nobody wants to know. There's parts of this area of the world that human feet have not been on in 60 years. So yeah, it's secret and it's strange. I think it got stranger when I got here.
We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week, only
better.
It's the Gospel Revolution Pledge Drive. Here's how it works. You pledge, and we drive the gospel onto devices in over 185 countries. Go to gospelrevolution.com and pledge today.
Since you're knocking on the door, you're begging to come in, yeah. Unaware that all the wildness been knocking from within. You are the love you seek, a perfect yet unique, righteous and holy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you're lost and alone, staring at the unknown, at least worth me to come. Gotta be nothing to complete. It's not a thing that you need, you're the love. Just remember to breathe and take a second off. Look, I'm just trying to remind you that you're perfectly divine, flawlessly designed.
deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes. You are listening to
Gospel Revolution.